We still do 7 NUFC Matters show a week for free. But if you want to help support NUFC Matters, then there are a few ways of doing it. Hit the like button on each live broadcast and video. This helps the channel grow. Hit the subscribe button and select the all notifications bell so you don't miss a single show. If you want to help us financially, then you can join the channel using this button with the membership starting at $1.99 a month. Or you can drop us a donation in the chat using a super sticker. We're also looking for sponsors. If you'd like your brand advertised on the flyers for the show and featured during the ad break, then email John at nufcmatters.com to arrange today.
With you, well, if you've gone sour, you want the world plus everything, but it won't work an hour. And now your questions of guilt creeping, and you're going by our flowers. You throw away the dreams we had, boy. I won't allow it. I said we're gonna fall out. Let you get out.
Good evening, welcome to NUFC Matters, the professionals, with me, Steve Rafe. Mitch and Stu are here, all present and correct. Hiya, lads.
Hi, Steve, how are you?
All right.
I am aching, lads, but thoroughly enjoyable game today at the Newcastle United Foundation. What a hell of a place that is, by the way. Wonderful, wonderful service. Great little place. Does a lot of great work for the community. A couple of quick clips. First of all, I've watched Adam Pearson play in these games. I knew, and bear in mind, if you watch right at the start, lads, I'm claiming a partial assist for this because it is from my, I got told you can't do throw-ins. It's a kick-in. So here's the first clip. See, that's why I said watch at the start. The ball never went out to play, lads. And I definitely started that from that wonderful kick across the pitch. Okay. And here's me rolling back the years like Baresi. And that's my highlights of the game today, lads. The rest's not worth chewing, believe you me.
We've got more highlights from there.
A great day, though. 700 quid raised and counting. Well done to Bruno's Magic Hat. Young Wilf had the time of his life. He got a penalty as well. Missed one and scored one. So well done to him. But well done to all the guys who turned up and played at the foundation this morning. A good occasion. And maybe there should be a little bit more about that. And was it walking football, says Rog?
I was just about to say that, you know.
Was it walking football? Was it no contact, five aside, says Steve, like Jorginho. Thank you, Ian. What's with the short socks? It's a Mike Tyson thing with me, that, Gary. I've always done that. Adam P showing his Gary Lineker poaching skills, nearly missed it too. Where was the low block, says Alan. Partial assist, says Chippers. Yes, well, it was just, see, the ball never went out, Chippers. What's my best position? Left back in the changing room, mate. And worried about your hamstrings, Steve, watching those tackles. And was I sober? Yes, I was sober. But it was there. I mean, that's the first time I've actually played football for 15 years since I hung up. Well, there you go. Thank you. Looking surly and disinterested, playing at the back five, says Benny. Steve, from the waist down, you look like Grealish. God, well, this could go on all night. Better than the singing, says Jules. Thank you. Okay, we'll move on to Newcastle United Matters. plenty to talk about on that front, as always. I'm not going to I'm not going to go down the FAB route with you yet, Stu. We need that. We need to wait a little bit until we get into that, because we did virtually a full show on that on Friday, with it only being an hour and a half. I have had a couple of questions sent in by people, and as always, like, you know, people tend to choose different mediums, and then I maybe save them on my phone and then forget to read them out. And I think I've only missed this by a week, so bear with us. I've got a couple here. Andrew said this one. Second question. His first one we've really covered on Amigos. He said, with Ashworth leaving, will we see signings being more focused on improving the first 11 than the squad overall? I think that's a good question, you know, Mitch, because, you know, in Ashworth's tenure at the club, he's brought in a hell of a lot of youngsters. You know, he's boosted the academy. He's boosted the 20, you know, the under 20s, the under 23s. He's done what he was asked to do, I guess. You know, from my perspective, you know, the academy is in a terrible mess, and it's still a long, long way from competing with the other academies in the area. But it's improved. So, I mean, do you think the new director will come in with a different ethos, or will he just have to do what he's told?
We don't really know what the original strategy was. I kind of tell you what a strategy I was seeing in signings and how we were making purchases. What we are aware of is that behind the scenes there was definitely friction, and I think it's pretty safe to say that I personally am not convinced that Eddie Howe got everything he wanted out of that situation in terms of signings. I think it's pretty clear to anybody watching what we need to be doing for next season is improving, taking that group that we have, say, 13 or 14 of, and turn it in with 17 or an 18, that we can rotate and drop players into that first team. So in some respects, if that isn't addressed, we're not going to get any better on the pitch, are we? And I think that's plain to see. What I do think is, I think, again, reading between the lines and based on some things I've been told and had suggested to me, what I do think is, I think you'll see we're more decisive and proactive in the market, perhaps, that signings will be made and won't end up falling through at the last minute. Because it's, you know, we based on information we've had, we're pretty convinced that Madison fell through at the last minute. And that was another thing that was put on Ashworth's shoulders. So, yeah, it's got to be. Absolutely got to be. But, you know, as the comment there just said, if his remit was to improve the academy and get things running better there, 90% of the way, you know, we've added some interesting young talent, and now we've got to focus to keep that process going. But we've suffered at the first team level for that.
What's your thoughts on it, Stu? The question obviously was about, you know, Ashworth. I mean, he did fulfill that remit of improving the academy in his tenure here. But do you think the new director of football will come in with a different kind of job to do?
I hope so. You're both aware of my stance is I've always been about feeding the top team, making the top team better. And if you're bringing the better players in, it pushes the lower players out down the road. Yes, we've been hamstrung with the contracts and the fact that nobody wanted to buy the lesser lights in our squad. And this is what's held things back. But it makes common sense that if you're going to buy quality, but you need to attract quality. So it's not as simple as that. I'll make it sound where bringing better players and then your best players become the good players and the good players become your worst players. So obviously the squad gets better. There's a lot more behind the scenes than that. But regarding Ashworth's role, I was disappointed with... I can understand why he's bought who was bought last year. And I think long-term we'll see the benefit of that. But because Newcastle had surpassed on their expectations and qualified for the Champions League, I think they've looked at it and said, like, this is the structure, this is our long-term plan, and they didn't want to move from it, where sometimes you've got to be proactive rather than reactive. and thought, right, you know what it is? We've jumped ahead of schedule. We can't spend more money, but instead of filling the squad, we need to fill in with the quality. And that was missing. But long-term, I don't think anyone can doubt Livramento is going to be a huge asset to Newcastle United, and hopefully Hall follows suit. And I'm sure everyone's in agreement that Tonali owes us big time, and he'll come back fully jolly speaking next season and on a mission to catch up for his own personal gains as well. You know, he's missed out on a European Championship and stuff like that. He's got a World Cup to go for on his personal level. He's got a lot to prove to himself that, look, I've missed out. He could have a huge say in how we play next season. But with the new sporting director, hopefully the remit is for him to speak in conjunction with Eddie Howe and identify the areas that they believe, not what we believe, what they believe need improving and why, and go and get the right players to make that squad better. And by the way, I did watch Scotland get beat 4-0 off.
I didn't want to mention it.
I watched it. You know, do you know what it is? I spoke to JC after the game.
What went wrong?
The game lasted 90 minutes, not 60.
Right.
Because 60 minutes, Scotland, I swear to you, if anyone watched it, hopefully they'd agree, Scotland by far the better team. If anyone watched who didn't know which team it was, Scotland away to Holland, you wouldn't believe it was Scotland with one-touch football knocking it about. High pressing and everything. I was like, wow. There was a left back there called Kieran Tierney. I thought I'll bag his drum again, right? He was crossing the ball with his left foot, winning tackles with either foot. He was taking free kicks with his right foot. He was covering for the centre half, although he's left at the back three. He's an exceptional talent. Yes, he's had injuries and stuff like that, but it's rumoured that Arsenal are willing to let him go for 15 million. So let's say it's 20 million with the Newcastle tax. You get that in, that's that side sorted. And then you can keep Dan Burn to cover, and you've got Hall can come on if invariably he's going to get injured, as they say. But that makes the first 11, start 11, that much better. Trust us, you watch that I'm sure you won't go watch it. But that's the player I would want. I know it's not going to happen, but I'll keep banging the drum until he retires.
Yeah, we all have bad days at the office, England certainly had one last night. I'll get to that in due course, though. We did get this one, and Kevin, I see you're in the chat, so that's good news. He went there. Morning, Steve. On the next pod, can you put this question to the lads? Are we worried about the silence from PIF in recent months? Cheers, mate. So thanks for sending that in, Kevin, and good to see you in the chat, so you'll be able to hear hear the lads' answer. Are you concerned, Mitch, about lack of anything, I guess, from PIF?
Not greatly. I don't find it particularly unusual, because if you look at how they run most of their other major investment businesses, they tend not to vocally interfere too much. But a period of silence often precedes big decisions. And they're usually positive decisions. So it doesn't concern us. I get why people might be a little worried about it. I was disappointed that they didn't find a way to back Eddie in January a little bit. I have been disappointed that of all the leadership group, I said it on Friday, you know, I feel like things have gone quiet generally, full stop. And some of the statements were being given from within the club that come from people like Darren Eales and Peter Silverstone are a little bit asinine. They're not quite the same as what we had, you know, when it was Amanda getting carried away, etc. And I think that has led to a bit of a different vibe. And I think everybody's concerned as to where we go forward. But I don't find it a major issue, because, chippers, they don't do their laundry in public. They just don't. But it wouldn't surprise us if when certain things happen. It's a number of things, and it's all at once. Boom, boom, boom.
Stu?
Not in the slightest. Not concerned at all. I was, you start thinking, this, if even this season, has the Fenway group spoke out at Liverpool? Have the Glazers spoke out with Man United? You know, all the chairmen, none of them have done the speech. I think Ben Jacobs alluded to something similar yesterday. It's not the done thing these days. It's not your local chairman like Freddie Shepherd or Jack Walker, where they feel obliged to connect with the local community. Football's now, it's a global commodity, isn't it? And as we all aware, PAF don't just own Newcastle United. So they'll speak when they feel the need is to speak. And knowing how the business gets done here, they won't speak just for the sake of speaking. A bit unlike us, I suppose, but they won't. They'll say it when they need to have, when they need to say something. And sometimes action speaks louder than words. And that's the motto they'll go down. So it just doesn't bother me at all that they don't pamper to needy journalists or people who make stupid accusations. That they're just getting on with doing what they're meant to be doing, and that's making money. And long term, the senior castle is a huge money making opportunity. And I think there's something Amanda referenced in the interview she did with Bloomberg. Yes, it's worth a lot more, but she wouldn't quote how much she believed it was worth. She joked that, did she say, I would get the sack if I said that? But she, what she was saying is, yes, it's worth a lot more. So for me, if my opinion's worth anything to alleviate anyone who's listening, I wouldn't worry about PIF jumping ship or anything like that. The club's doing probably better than what they thought it would at this stage 2 years on. But the next year is the third year off the five-year plan that's been often referenced from those within the club. So this time next year, if it looks like we're struggling, then expect to hear words or see action. But until then, they've got people that they trust to do the job and then expect them to do it. They'll hold them accountable. That's it.
Simple as that, really. Yeah, I'm not too worried either, to be honest, lads. You know, when they do make a statement, they surely will. It's a lot of negativity just around our club ownership still bothers me. You know, headlines written by, you know, journalists looking for a bit of clickbait, but politicians still dropping our name in the Houses of Commons or the Houses of Lords. It's all really still not gone away, you know. And yeah, I always worry about that slightly, that, you know, one day the Saudis might just go, you know what, stuff this. But I still think, you know, that's something from our perspective that we won't have to worry about until at least past 2030. I still think that, you know, the one thing they don't want to do is buy a football club and then get rid of it. It looks as if they've given up, and I would imagine, Mitch, that they're not that kind of people.
I would have everybody remember for the 18 months, 2 years after the initial knockback, that even though, to the best that we could, we were telling everybody that we still knew they were still around, a lot of people had given up then. And I think that patience and that diligence to sit and wait and bide their time and see the purchase through should tell everybody about their longevity and their ability to stick with a project when they believe in it. If they didn't believe in this, if they thought there was an easier way of doing it, they'd have buggered off 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Everybody worrying about them buying another club. If they wanted to, they could have done then. And even if they were to buy another club, they've already talked about multi-club models, and that project would be a different PIF project in Newcastle United, and it wouldn't take precedence, it wouldn't be get preferential treatment. They've got more than enough money to service a couple of clubs at the top flight around Europe, you know. But at the same time, I understand why that makes people jumpy. But if they were going to do that, they'd have done that when, you know, everybody felt it was dead, because it wasn't dead and they were still there. They were being patient, waiting for change. In a similar way, I think they're just at the minute taking a step back and seeing what the fallout from all the FFP struck PSR stuff is. Because you can guarantee if we are seen to be at the head of a movement against it, there's four clubs at least would turn around and say, see, we told you so, told you what they wanted to do. This is them. This is showing them, showing their real face. And they'll go whinging to that, to the people that they prefer to be in charge of the Premier League to make things more difficult for us again. So I think everybody just don't get disheartened about them giving up. If they were going to give up, they'd have done it 3 years ago.
Yeah. Would you agree, Stu, on that?
Mostly. Well, I'd say in addition is what Newcastle was to them 3, 4, 5 years ago when Amanda first made the proposition to them was that it was a business proposal. And it's all done on spreadsheets. This is expectations. This is projections. This is... So... They like the idea of investing into a globally recognised league, sport, let's call it sports washing if you want, but to invest in there at a lower price in comparison, you've seen what Chelsea went for, even though that money's still not been paid. You've seen what they went for. The beauty of it all is there would have been Tottenham owners that had Tottenham not tried to swing the lead with the price they were asking for them. Which they believe Tottenham is worth 10 times more than Newcastle. And there are a lot of things, you can have a lot of money, but it doesn't mean you've got a lack of brains. So Newcastle was a business proposition and they were genuinely interested with it. When all the difficulties were put in place, it wasn't the be all and end all for PIF. You know, we are, to coin a phrase, a drop in an ocean for them, money-wise. So they said, okay, if it's making it difficult, we'll step back, come back when we can, and we'll look at it then. And then as soon as the path was made clear for them to come back, they looked at it and they jumped at it. And Mitch is bang on. They will not walk away losing. They'll be more determined, if anything, to keep going until they do win, and they'll get more satisfaction out of that. And on a business point of view, it'll give us more time to have organic growth than just shoot from October the 7th, 2021 to imagine May 2024, Premier League champions, May 25, European champions. It seems manufactured. It seems wrong. Whereas if we've had to overcome more obstacles, you get more support and you get more long-term, bigger fan base. So perversely, this might actually work in our favour. All the obstacles that people are now realising we're putting our way, this will make them more determined. And as Mitch rightly said, they've got more money than the rest of them put together times 20. And that's what scared them. And because of all these rules got changed because of us, it's now starting to bite a few of them in the arse themselves. They panicked that much about Newcastle, they took the eye off the ball about themselves. And this is why it'll come to a head. And 100% with Mitch, they'll sit back. If you're doing this, we agree with you. We've done that when we voted at the Premier League things, but they won't lead it. They won't be the ones causing the trouble in the playground, but they'll help the ones who have been bullied, and they'll look like they'll come out on the right side and do the right thing. And then what they need from us is what we've given them. Is all our support, but the patience word is the key. They will keep going until they get what they want. And you mentioned it there, Steve, 2030. That's their main goal. We'll have won trophies by then. So if we went back to 2021 when we were all staring at the prep, we knew that we were getting relegated that season. We hadn't won a game by the time it took over. We knew we were going to get relegated that season. Then the takeover happened, and for many thousands of us, our lives changed overnight on a football point of view. We just want it as quick as we can because we were looking so far the other way. We've got everything in front of us now, and we're just going to trust them and let them get there, and they'll get there as quick as they can as well. But they won't rock the boat to a point where they're the ones that seem tipping it over, but they might be part of the swing.
Yeah, okay. The other question, which I did get in from where is it? Here we are. From Andrew was, he says that I've got a few things to possibly discuss tonight. Why haven't we seen more sponsorships this season? As I would think it would have brought in a higher amount with us being in the Champions League this season compared to next season and helped with PSR. We've touched on this briefly, lads. And I think, Mitch, it's, you know, year ending in the tax has been one thing that I think we've mentioned. And, the season isn't over. We've already brought in Adidas and Seller. Maybe this is something that we might look at bringing in it, you know, before the end of the season, we might hear about some kind of sponsorship. That's what we've suggested anyway.
Yeah, and everything's got to be timed. Yeah, periods of time and usually fall in with the season and the seasons and or accounting periods. And also, let's not underestimate how complicated some of these deals are to do. They just don't happen overnight. And one of the things that Peter Silverstone was talking about in those notes for the FAB is that we're reaching out to plenty of people, but not as many people are reaching in the other way. We could put a load of PIF associated deals together. And again, that gives certain people a stick to people with. And I think we're showing that we can be cleverer than that. But if you look at how complicated, for example, the Castoria deal was to get out of, they're difficult to get out of because of the time that's put into putting them in place and the legal things attached with that. They just don't happen overnight. What I think you will see is a load of them announced in one go, because I think they've been working on multiple fronts over a period of time. And I think everything being lined up, I think a lot is being lined up with the changeover to the Adidas sponsorship. But also, being associated with Adidas will be a better pull to go out to speak to somebody than being associated with Castoria. Your brand is going to be seen on an Adidas product. That's Adidas, who have stores all over the world. I don't even want to contemplate how many stores they've got in Dubai alone. There's an outlet, Adidas outlet, on every corner. And so you're talking genuine global exposure, whereas Castoria have got one shop in the Dubai Mall, for example, and it's not a Newcastle shop, it's a Castoria shop, and it showcases all of the teams from cricket to rugby to football to F1, etc. That's the difference. And I think that'll make the negotiating with people who have an interest, if it's a passing interest and we're reaching out to them, or it's a more active interest and they're reaching into us. But they just don't happen overnight. They are ridiculously complicated to do. They've got to be right legally. And that seems to take forever in certain aspects. But that's because it's got to be right.
Okay, plenty of comments coming in. Good evening to Stanley Maggs, new name in the chat, like, so good to see you there. Do you think Aramco's sponsorship is too on the nose, so they look elsewhere? Daniel asks, Mitch.
Yeah, could be. Like I say, we could load it with a lot of PIF associated sponsorships. But that seems to be another one of the little things that for certain clubs and the Premier League want to be even more strict on. It's also why I think we've taken probably less than we could have off Seller, for example. I think we could have probably got somebody to pay more for the shirt front. But what we've done is we're playing down this market value thing. And so because it then means our deals breeze through. But we shouldn't have to accept that all the way through. If there's a way we can take more money in terms of sponsorship from someone who isn't PIF associated, that's the way to do it.
Stu, thoughts on this sponsorship question? It's one we'll get asked all the time. David Monks's comment was good. Bringing in sponsorship is the easy bit. Bringing in the right sponsor at the right time is the key. Deals of the size the club are looking at take time. Big sponsors attract big sponsors. It's an interesting point, that, Stu.
It's a very valid point, and it was just about what I was going to say. It's just a shorter version. It's because, as Mitch said, there's so many Adidas stores worldwide. We've already been told that we're going to be one of their elite six that they're going to be pushing. So it'll be yourselves, Arsenal, Man United, Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, and Juventus, is that right? Is that the six?
Yeah. I think that's the six.
So look, there's three, four European superpowers in there, which I don't classify Arsenal as one of. They're between us and them. But we'll be in every, our shirt will be in every store worldwide. Adidas is a global brand. Castore is not even big in Newcastle. And when the biggest store they've got in Newcastle, look at how much grief they get for it. Adidas is an internationally recognized brand that's, when you see Newcastle there, you know when you talk about shirt sponsors? There you go. I can't justify putting more than 20, 25 million with Seller on the shirt, but they said Seller's a multi-shirt, multi-year deal. That could have certain caveats in it where if someone comes in and is willing to pay more, you then become the sponsor of the, this is all hypothetical, by the way, but the sponsor of the Fan Zone, and we bring in a new sponsor for the shirt. How could the Premier League say you can't ask for more than that? You can't ask for 40 or 50 million a year for your shirt sponsor when they're in every Adidas store worldwide. So a lot of it will be linked around the launch of Adidas because a lot was made of their trip there in that documentary they did last season. And you could see it was a huge thing, a big win for the club. And we're easy to say when we think they're not doing right, we need to applaud them for doing things right. And getting linked in with the global brand like Adidas is going to be fantastic for Newcastle. Not just the money that we get from them, it's the money it will help bring in and the exposure it'll bring us. Because Adidas don't spend that money on a team and then just neglect them. They will be pushing us. And then when the more shirts get sold, the more money comes in, the more someone sees someone else in Malaysia or in Hong Kong or in Guatemala wearing a Newcastle shirt and think, you know what? That's a new Adidas shirt. It looks nice. How many people out there have bought a shirt from a team they've got no affiliation with, but they like the shirt? And this is where Adidas can be a huge, huge gain for us. And it'll just help fast track where we go. And I'm agreeing with your dad there, Mitch. I rank with St. James's Park for 50 million a year. Sounds fine to me because we know the money will get used correctly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we've talked a lot about other sponsorships as well. The grass cutter will be sponsored like it is at Manchester City. You know, Halftime Entertainment, we don't have any, but, you know, we'll end up having Halftime Entertainment sponsored by, you know, and the list is endless. You know, that is what will always happen. You'll always get other stuff coming in, which you can sponsor. And Mike Ashley obviously, you know, didn't see the value in doing any of this, which always is a bit of a head scratcher to me when he likes making money. Lots of questions coming in. Neil Calvert was in early with this one. Question for tonight's show: do you think the fines faced by Everton, Forest and Leicester would push the likes of Chelsea and Man City to join a European league, Mitch?
No, they're not severe enough. Chelsea and Man City, based on what the punishments of Everton, Forest and Leicester, or certainly Everton, Forest have already been given, and what Leicester potentially face, it's not strong enough to discourage Chelsea or Man City. You'd need to be putting stronger punishments on. Like the Forest letter said, you know, we got close to FFP. They've effectively missed out because they did a transfer just a little bit too late. And they could have just gone busting, pissed everybody off and only taken 9 points. You know, it is a nonsense, really. And I think this is the problem with it. Leicester effectively facing double jeopardy, that the AFL are going to go after them and then potentially they'll get promoted and would have a points deduction hanging off them for being promoted. I know the Leicester case is a little different because there's genuinely an element of their mismanagement in there. There's nobody should be making 650 million on player profit in 3 years and still managing to fail PSR. That would suggest somebody spending the money on the other side is really fucked up. But it's a little different. Each of the cases are different. Chelsea, I think, saw what they got fined off of UEFA and thought they were just going to suffer some sort of financial tap on the wrist, and then they're going, that'll be hilarious. They're now realizing there may be some significant sporting sanction come along with it, and now they're shitting their pants. And so, and again, like I've said before, Everton and Forest's cases are both pretty clear cut and open and shut, but as is Leicester's, really. Leicester, I think, have been less than transparent in the way Everton were at times. But the Chelsea failures and the City failures and the City charges are so much more complicated. So would it lead them to go? I think if they faced severe sporting sanction, you'd suddenly see Man City and Chelsea leading a charge with those who are ready to form a Super League. Yes. Because I think that's what effectively the company that is behind the Super League, that is really under control of Real Madrid and Barcelona. They're waiting for an English ally. They're desperate for someone to break ranks in the Premier League. And it would take severe sanctions for that to happen, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the problem, isn't it, Stu? This Super League, I don't think it's really gone away. There's always going to be talk of a Super League. And I think that's probably why people, do think, if the threats of punishment are going to hang over the likes of Man City and Chelsea, would they consider leaving the league? I mean, nobody knows apart from those two clubs, but we saw the objection from Chelsea fans in particular when Chelsea were linked with that. They came out in force. But yeah, it hasn't gone away, the Super League. The talk is always going to be there.
Yeah, I'll answer John Spencer's question first. He says, why doesn't he gaffer sponsor Newcastle? Now he does. One of the company he owns is Noon, which is on the show. Regarding the Super League, Man City, Chelsea, I think it'll be a load of bluster. It's a veiled threat that they'll use against the Premier League to keep punishments down, because it's the fines is what Chelsea were after. And Mitch, you've said that many times, haven't you? That Chelsea were playing the game thinking that, okay, we'll get a 40, 50 million quid fine, because that's what had been set out previously for those who had stepped over the line. Right, we can handle that. But that's not been the case. And now this points thing's got everyone flustered. But using fluster and bluster in the same sentence, I think it's a load of bluster. They might huff and puff, but you've said it, Steve, fan power. If Man City hate the UEFA, said they hate the idea of the European thing. So if they said that, if their owner said, right, we're leaving the Premier League, this is their bread and butter, we're joining the European Super League, we're forfeiting our membership within the Premier League, the FA Cup, et cetera, et cetera. Imagine what size the attendance will be getting. And it wasn't that long ago that we as a club were giving out 10,000 free season tickets to make sure that the stadiums look full, because this is what the TV audiences expect. This is what gets promised by the TV companies. There's a bigger picture, but it is a chess game. It's like it's cat and mouse. But what's the old saying? If you can't do the time, don't do the crime. If they've messed up, they'll have to take a punishment. But I do think with the political involvement, Man City's punishment, if there is to be a punishment, and I've got to keep saying if there is to be, because they haven't been charged of anything, well, they haven't been found guilty of anything yet, it'll be far more lenient than had it been a Nottingham Forest, an Everton, or a Leicester City. And what we can't do is change or turn back time. What we can do is look to make the future better. And the one thing that they need to do is be consistent. How can you say you get 6 points, you get 10 points, we'll drop it to 6, you get 4. Everton's new point thing comes in. If they get more than 4, there's going to be complaints. So that there has to be something simplified to say, this is going into next season. If you breach this rule, this is what's going to happen. But there's going to be a cluster of clubs, ourselves included, if they're not financially savvy enough, that are going to breach financial fair play next season. And that includes some of the big six. And that goes back to what I said earlier. They brought, or they helped push these rules through quick enough to stop the growth of Newcastle United, the big bag monster from Saudi Arabia, and they've hampered themselves. And now it has to be addressed. If Man City, that I think that'll be seen at the end of next season. Chelsea, will they get fined? Well, they haven't been charged of anything yet, so it's all hearsay, isn't it? Leicester are charged for something for the Premier League, whether in the Football League. The Football League can't charge them for something for whilst in the Premier League. Let's see what happens if and when they get promoted and what punishment gets levied. But they've got Nick DeMarco in the case. And to save the club money towards financial fair play, because there was a question earlier about the Mike Ashley trying to sue the club. Again, hearsay regarding the shirts. One name to him, I'll say to Mike Ashley, was Dave Whelan of DW Sports. Did he not say he could not, Newcastle shirts could not be sold in his shop?
Because he did, yeah.
He's the owner and he decides.
He fell out with Ashley, didn't he? Yeah.
So if our owners decide, I think we've probably got lawyers more that have got more money than Mike Ashley. It's a path, again, to me, it's a slow news week. And it's people just stirring the pot to get clicks. I don't think Mike Ashley is stupid enough to try and take on the might of the PIF.
Talking to people trying to get clicks, how about this one, lads? Let's all laugh at Manchester United. United will trigger £75 million Bruno buyout close in the summer. Ashworth already working in an unofficial capacity and has shared full details of fee. Close friend Joe Linton is part of the solution and will also leave for United doubling his wages. Newcastle won Greenwood in part exchange. Who on earth is this Leonard Leeses? Is this honestly, tell you what, that's an absolute belter, by the way. But yeah, I've seen a few people biting at that. Don't get taken in by rubbish like that, for God's sake. Please don't. Thanks to George. George has taken a membership out. Thank you, George. Unbelievable. And their roadblocks chipped in for the Christmas fund. We are the Super League, often quoted as the best in the world. This is Roblox. He's chipped in a fiver for some Malverno. My wife will be over the moon about that, Stu, after Monday's performance. We'll have a quick ad break. Back after this. A big thanks to all our sponsors, Skips and Bins. Go to their website, skipsandbins.com. Email inquiries at skipsandbins.com or telephone 0800 25 45 25 3. Easy contract free and pay-as-you-go waste collection. Thanks to Mr. Vicky's Sauces, handmade in Cumbria. Go to their website, mrvickys.co.uk. Email info at mrvickys.co.uk or telephone 01768 210102. Thanks to United Group Travel. Go to their website, unitedgrouptravel.com. Email info at unitedgrouptravel.com or phone 01670 632 460 or mobile 0791 666 4174. They're a local company from Morpeth and there are no strangers on our tours, just friends you haven't met yet. Big thanks to Media Arts for all the help with the video side of things. And if you want to subscribe to the channel, hit the subscribe button under the video. Click the thumb up to like the video and click share to share to your social media. If you want to help the channel financially, you can pay a one-off £25 fee. You get a cup, a scarf, a pen, and a membership card and entry into the NUFC Matters monthly draw. Email john at nufcmatters.com for more details. Or if you've got a smartphone, scan the QR code now and it takes you straight to the membership pack. We also support the food bank on this channel. Go to nufcfansfoodbank.co.uk and you'll find the match day bucket. You can make a donation virtually today. You can also find us on iTunes, Spotify and other events during the year. NUFC Matters Live will be at the O2 City Hall on Friday the 2nd of August for an evening with Rob Lee, One Night in Antwerp. Tickets start at £15 and you can get them from ticketmaster.co.uk. An evening with the Entertainers takes place on Friday the 24th of January 2025 at the Tyne Theatre and Opera House in Newcastle. Telephone 0844 249 1000 or visit the website tynetheatreandoperahouse.uk to buy tickets today. You can also catch me
on the North East Footy Breakfast Show, live on Tune Radio, weekdays 7 till 9 a.m. on DAB, smart speakers, and thetuneuk.com. And don't forget, NUFC Matters Live End of Season Party, July the 20th, 2024, 5 o'clock till late. We'll have Gibbo and Super Mac on doing a live talking. Ask George will be live on stage, and the Long Sands are coming along to do an acoustic set, all in aid of Dementia Matters. Tickets are at tenner, newcastlelegends.com or nufcmatters.com to buy your tickets. And the rumour has it that if you want to go clubbing, Stu will be away from the wedding by then, and he'll take with a graze, which is great news. And Peter Beardsley is doing a talk in on the 2nd of June at the Tyneside Irish Centre. Tickets are about 18 quid on Woucher. So get yourself onto Woucher. Tickets are selling fast on there now, so don't miss out. Get yourself onto Woucher to get your tickets for the Peter Beardsley talk in. Okay, Mike Ashley is back in the news, lads. Is he taking us to court, Mitch? What's going on?
Well, there is it's something being lodged with the court about him not being allowed to distribute Newcastle-United shirts. Stu's right, of course. Is he stupid enough to take them on? Well, on the face of it, yeah. But at the same time, is his agenda just to get a little bit of attention? See if he can make a quick bob for doing now, other than dropping a legal challenge, that hopefully somebody will settle out of court, and he makes money for now, and he gets a nice little strap line out of it in the newspapers and can play the victim. And I think that's probably as much of it as it is. But yeah, I mean, I've had that. Was sent that court set of court papers last week. It's quite a, when you read through it, it's woe is me. It woe is me. The poor businessman who can't do his business. Well, it's a shame he didn't do the business properly when he owned the club, mate.
It's interesting, Stu, isn't it, that Mike Ashley, the one thing he did get from Newcastle United was a hell of a lot of publicity. I always say, you know, I realised, you know, when we were walking up to St James's Park, and you know, people were protesting outside there with bed sheets and coffins and you name it. You know, I think we did it over the period of time as supporters. But I just realised then that he just loved the publicity, and it was what he wanted the club for, to promote his sports brand globally, and we gave him that. So maybe Mitch has got a point there. You know, that's the reason that, you know, he is doing this. It gets him back in the public eye a little bit and promotes his brands globally.
It's a great point, Mitch. Well said. We just had a call in on when the adverts were on. So I said he's just after Colin Minchin.
Oh, he's nicked your glow. He's nicked your theory.
All right. I've nicked it. Don't worry about that. He is after Colin Minchin. He's from the school of there's no such thing as bad publicity. And you can't do what he did to DW Sports and then claim the victim himself. So let him pipe on. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. Chris Jagger sends this in tonight. What do you think of this tweet, lads? Rui Pedro Braz is close to occupying the position of sports director at Newcastle United with Roberto Mancini, his preferred coach. I mean, this is just a rumour and speculation. We've already talked about a potential sporting director, Mitch, but I think the interesting point about this is that we've already mentioned it on here that, you know, be careful what you wish for. You know, as far as Eddie Howe's concerned, you know, if there had been a bit of friction between him and Ashworth, which reading between the lines, it looked as if there had been, maybe they didn't see as eye to eye as we all thought. And there was lots of rumours coming out 6 months before, you know, Ashworth even was linked with a move to Manchester United. So, you know, that is the problem, isn't it? If a new director of football comes in, you know, they may want their own man.
Very true. And that all has to be part of the bigger picture when decisions are made about what they're going to do to fill that role. We were led to believe it was almost modular, that if one came out, somebody went in and everything else could be left in place. The one thing about that particular sporting director, not that I know that much about him, but what is obvious from what he's done in the roles he's had. He's very, very good at finding talent and selling them on at a big profit. Now, is that what we want? Or do we need something a little different to that? I would suggest probably something a little different to that. However, if we want to look at improving the squad and generating money through sales and accepting the limitations that come with that, that you're never going to be at the very top of the game when you're a net selling club, then so be it. And what will come with that may well be a change of manager. But I think the key element out of that for me is, like you say, be careful what you wish for.
What's your views on this one, Stuart? It's a tweet. It's speculation. There's nothing more in it. But just the wider point of, you know, potentially wanting another manager in. Would a director of football have that kind of power at the club to be able to do that?
I've got a different, more cynical, more sceptical view of this, and I'm going to say it's more the Man United publicity machine whirling up again. And if Newcastle are looking for a new sporting director and they're getting linked with all these different people, that means we're close to get Dan Ashworth. They're not going to pay two people, so we get a lower price for Dan Ashworth. And this is where, again, I will applaud the club. I think they've been very canny in saying, passing it to an agency and saying, you go and recruit a sporting director, or you come back with names for us. So this agency is not just going to speak to everyone and anyone. They'll speak to, because it's their reputation on the line as well, they'll court the best people, where Newcastle can't be accused of tapping anyone up, as Man United have been. They can't be accused of double standards because of what's happened with Dan Ashworth. It's an agency trying to get the best fit for the role that they've been paid to fill. And I'm sure part of that remit, there'll be questions, is there a part of the vision will be put out. We believe, we want Eddie Howe to be our manager. Would you be willing to work with him? How would you work with him? Just the same as interviews that the people who got interviewed for the job after Steve Bruce left. How do you see yourself filling the role? What do you expect to bring to the role? How do you expect to improve the club? Which areas would you target to make the club better, to make it more efficient, to make it more successful? And I'm sure Eddie Howe is a big saying that. And for me, to trod a path that we've worn many times, I think with Eddie Howe and Dan Ashworth, all confidence or trust was lost, or not all, but the majority was lost when we didn't get Madison. And I think that's when the doubts were sown in Eddie Howe's mind. And you could see he wasn't upset at the press conference straight after. He wasn't gloating, but he wasn't upset. And I honestly believe Eddie Howe will be here next season, and any sporting director that is brought in will be brought in under the knowledge that Eddie Howe's going to be the manager. And this is the type of formation he wants to play. This is the type of football he wants to play. These are the type of players he needs to target. And none of that goes directly to the club. It all goes to the agency, who are getting paid to do it. So I think it's a clever move. Mancini, to me, it's a lazy link. He's in charge of the Saudi national team. He resigned from the Italian national team to go and take a huge, huge pay rise to manage the Saudi team. So he's either going to stay there because that's the chosen one they have for him and be successful with them. If they don't think he's successful, why would they palm him off to Newcastle? So for me, it's just mischief making. And Eddie Howe is a part of our plans. And I think any sporting director that comes in will work in tandem with Eddie Howe. And I've seen more reports now that the name that we threw forward about a month ago, Paul Mitchell, no relation to Dr. Neil, but Paul Mitchell, that he seems to be a lot of favourites. I think, did Ben Jacobs mention that name yesterday as well? Yeah, so that's where I think, for me, that would be the preferred option, but that does mean it is the one that's coming. So we'll see, but what will happen is they'll make a decision that will benefit Newcastle United, and the contract will be as watertight as you can expect. So if they ever have made a mistake with Ashworth, they'll certainly learn from it very quickly.
Okay, a good question here from Barry. After the latter's result yesterday, Steve, do you believe in the Newcastle curse? Yeah, there is this rumour of a curse surrounding the football club. Unlucky for the lasses yesterday. It was a bridge too far for them against hashtag United, and losing the game 2-1. You know, they're on an upward spiral. Have they won the league today? Has it been confirmed yet? I'm not sure. I saw some kind of message that went out from somebody earlier on, but I didn't have time to look into it. Too busy nursing me weary bones. But I think, you know, promotion again for the women's team is huge, and I think they've done very well. And again, something that Ashworth probably will take a little bit of credit for, in the sense that he's probably, you know, put wheels in motion to improve that kind of thing as well. But there's no disgrace losing a cup final 2-1. The lads are used to it, you know, and I'm sure the girls will win a trophy sooner rather than later, Mitch.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel more pissed off that they lost to a team called hashtag United, to be honest.
I know, but I can't get away with that. What a stupid name.
Aye. But there you go. This is the modern world. It is. But yeah, I mean, you've got to respect that. You look at our ladies' team, turning professional as they have. They've got a long way to go to the Women's Super League. A long way. And so every experience they have, be that winning or losing a cup, you know, getting promotion, fighting for promotion points, etc., is part of the development down that road. They're on a learning curve, which is now they've been turned professional. They've been put on a very steep learning curve. By that nudge by the club. And there are definitely elements within the squad and within the football that needs to develop and grow, and that's natural. And I think, you know, I think personally the next waypoint that they should be looking at is, I believe, Sunderland and Durham ladies played against each other in Division 2. The Women's Super League today.
5-3 to Sunderland.
And that's the next one is why not have three derbies in a league? And so for me, that should be the next waypoint to say, right, where do we want to be and what kind of trajectory are we on? And like us losing the Carabao Cup, there'll be players that'll take experience from that, and it'll be invaluable in the future, whether that's still at Newcastle United or whether they've gone on to other teams. That's all part of development in football. And so, as I say, I think the women's game still has so many things that need worked upon. But the only way we're showing that, if you put the effort and the time in and you're prepared to back them by giving them wages as professionals, you get that development reasonably quickly in comparison. So, yeah, and well backed by a good turnout of support. Again, you know, it must be fantastic for those guys to walk out on the pitch and see so many black and white shirts in the stands.
Yeah,
it must be a genuinely heart-moving experience for them.
Yeah, fair play to the 3,000 who travelled down there yesterday. Amazing support, and unlucky, but the lasses, I'm sure, will bounce back. And thoughts, of course, with Becky Langley as well, who lost her grandma, I think, a couple of days before.
Saw
that rather horrific interview after the game. I know she has to fulfil media interviews, but you know, it was clearly that the poor lass was distraught. But thoughts with Becky Langley and her family. But yeah, look, it's, you know, you win some, you lose some, Stu, with regards to the result.
Well, to be honest, Steve, and I don't want to sound controversial or Joey Barton-esque, I haven't really followed the women's team. I see the information I get from the club, like on the Twitter feeds and stuff like that, and it's great that they're doing well. I think it's been fantastic that the club have backed them the way they have, financially and in person, especially Amanda. She attends a lot of the games. But it's... I don't know, I support Newcastle United, and for me it's always been about the men's team. I couldn't really tell you how well the youth team or name five youth players. It's always been about supporting the main team for me. And I do wish the ladies all the best, and I do know they've got a huge mountain to climb. And that's if they're allowed to get into the Women's Premier League, because, again, politics are a play to try and, coin a Mitch phrase, pull the drawbridge up before they get there. I know it's an ambition, and it's a great thing to show for all the anti-Saudi people out there that Newcastle United women's team are challenging for trophies at the top end. So that I'm a supporter of. Watching a brand of football that doesn't appeal to us isn't, and that's just my personal opinion. And I probably couldn't name two players that play for the girls. I'm really sorry to say it that way. But I'm glad they got to a cup final. And hopefully they get promoted, which it looks like they're going to win the league anyway. And they can consolidate next season and then have a big push for the top league. But I don't know enough, Steve, to sit here and start saying so many wonderful things. I just wish them all the luck.
Yeah, that's fair enough. And Blue Rhythm Boy says, fair play to the lad who founded Noons hashtag United. They have achieved a lot in a short space of time. Okay, couple of other subject matters tonight. Another half an hour to go. Mark Byers says, I don't think we've ever been able to say that in an international game between England and Brazil, Newcastle had arguably the best player on each team, Bellingham aside, who's just pure class. A couple of other points made about the England. Geordie Boy said, I didn't really know that Ward Jeff Hendrick had a younger brother who played for Brazil. Football talent must run in the family. Yeah, it was an interesting game, wasn't it? There was a quick Anthony Gordon man of the match. There it was from Alan last night, in my opinion. Can England win anything under Southgate, lads? I never like asking questions about England, this Stu, but I'll start with Stu on this one. Can we win anything? I think the answer is no. Chippers as well says, why is Southgate playing players who are not playing for their club again? Bloody ridiculous. Yet again, on the eve of a tournament, he's doing that. I genuinely think the board has sailed on Southgate winning anything, and he gave it his best shot. He got to a semi, he got to a final, and that he's now continuing to pick players who, for me, don't deserve to be picked. And I just think he messes too much towards tournament starting, like he's done again. I think you should know your best team now. Two games to go, you should be looking at playing your strongest 11. And fair enough, substitutions, etc. But yeah. I don't think we're going to do anything. Stu, what's your view as a honorary Scotsman on NUFC matters?
I am not an honorary Scotsman. I am a Scotsman, but I'll give you a non-English view of the England game. And I think Gareth Southgate was in a no-win situation. He makes the changes and he knows his core team. He knows his core squad. Everyone knows he has his favourites. So we all know what he's up to. So had he went with his tried and tested, it would have been, why didn't you give other people a chance? It's a friendly game. So he does that, and then he loses, and then why didn't you play your strongest team? You know, so with that, he's not going to win. I'd rather talk about the Newcastle perspective of it, and Anthony Gordon, he had plenty of endeavour, which we expected. He acquitted himself very well, which we expected. He didn't look out of place, which we expected he wouldn't look out of place. I think he surprised a lot of people who don't watch him week in, week out. He's with his energy, his willingness to run back, etc. And you know what it was? When he got substituted and Rashford come on, I was hoping, not because I'm Scottish watching an England game, I was hoping Rashford wouldn't score, because in that very same Manchester United publicity machine would have went in overdrive again and said, "There cometh the hour, cometh the man, he's a big game player, he scores against Brazil." And all his inadequacies would have been pushed to one side. and Rashford would have been the favourite. Whereas it stands now, I think Gordon's done himself, give himself a huge boost to be in that squad. And I think the fact, I nearly said what I was going to say about the Manchester their team, but for me, he flatters to deceive. And if Southgate has a straight call to make between the two of them, then the team play, the enthusiasm, the willingness of Anthony Gordon should trump the prima donna-like silken attitude that Rashford seems to have developed over the last couple of years. I think he's a better team player. And for those who think Southgate's got something against Newcastle United players, then answer this. Why would he play Conor Gallagher to mark Bruno to make Bruno the best player on the pitch if he didn't like Newcastle players? Because that's what I thought he did. Bruno must have been rubbing his hands with delight, thinking, this is who's going to be marking me. And Bruno showed his quality, and we all know he is. But instead of, again, he showed it on a bigger stage. And it's great for us as a club that we are getting this international recognition, because England versus Brazil is a big fixture worldwide. Whether I like it or not, whether other countries like it or not, they are two of the biggest footballing nations. Brazil are probably the most famous, and England founded it. So this game will always attract a bigger audience. And the fact that Gordon was the best player for England and Bruno was the best player for Brazil was fantastic for Newcastle. And that's what I'm taking from it.
Okay. What's your views on this, Mitch? I mean, Anthony Gordon's performance was great. He didn't score, unfortunately, but did himself a world of good, Mitch?
Certainly didn't do himself any harm. Looked sharp, looked dangerous when he was on the ball. But I think last night I went out to watch the match with some of the Dubai mags and had the kind of night you can only really have in Dubai. When you're sitting watching England-Brazil with three Englishmen, a Ukrainian, a German, a Lithuanian, and a lad from Beijing who turned up looking for the Dubai mags in a black and white shirt with Gordon on the back. And then the night proceeded to dive into the twilight zone from there. But it was a cracking evening, cracking watch. The game itself, yeah, I mean, it's the thing I keep coming out of it is two of the best players on the pitch were ours. On either side, I think England are desperate for a left fullback. Chilwell's not the answer.
Sorry to interrupt you. Is although England play too passively, if you let the shackles off, I genuinely believe that getting beat last night might wake them up a bit, and I genuinely believe they can win the tournament, and I do believe that.
I really don't think so. Like, I, you know what? I genuinely think as well, Phil Foden's wasted in that England team. Like, I think we've got a similar position to Lampard and who was it? Who used to play alongside Gerrard?
Lampard and Gerrard.
They could never find a way of playing the pair of them. And I think that's what we've got with, like, Bellingham and Foden. I think we're in a position where one of them has to play in his natural position and another one has to play out of his natural position. And I just don't think if you could find a way of getting them both in the team and playing it effectively, I think we'd have a chance. But I don't know. Would anyone have Chilwell ahead of Big Dan Byrne, says Clarky, at Newcastle?
No. On the evidence of last night, no.
No. You know, we know what Stu's answer is, and it's Scottish.
Yes.
Tierney.
No, I didn't see anything, you see.
You did, but I can just see it in your eyes.
No, Chilwell has been a good player, but I think he's one injury too many, and he's on the decline.
Yes. He's got too many injuries in him, isn't he? And he seems to have declined from that point. Conor Gallagher yesterday, that's the most I've seen him try and go forward in a game this season.
He got hammered by most of the people on social media, like.
The reason I was smiling that is because you were talking about left backs, and I was going to see a Kieran Tierney. That's why I was smiling.
Gallagher got hammered. A lot of criticism of Gallagher last night. People saying he's out of his depth, etc.
There's a couple of them looked a little bit, you know. I don't think Watkins did himself much favours last night either. No. But the question is he really a penetrative number nine, or should he be playing off of a number nine? And I think that's the question for him. I just don't think Southgate is going to take any risks, and that's the problem. He's going to fall back repeatedly. The player, you'll tell where he picks on form, and then he picks the players he likes. And that's what his default setting is. And when he does that, we'll lose that little bit of flair, and people get tied down in the system that he wants to play. I think you could comfortably play Bellingham and Foden in the same side and let them run amok. But I don't think Southgate's a clever enough coach to unlock that with a system and then trust those players to drop them in and let them free. He will have them too. He's too didactic in his directions to players and ties them down with the system because they've got instructions and you will do this and you will do that. And that puts shackles on top quality players. We should be able to come up with a system that allows Bellingham and Foden to rip teams apart because they've got that in them.
They're just canes up top where they can run past them. But with Watkins, he has to be the tip of the spear. And that was the difference from the game I watched. I honestly think if Kane's there where he can drop back and feed them off and them two buzzing around him, that's why I think they'll win the Euros.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Lewis Hall was great against Poland. So Stephen Kennedy, will we see him again on our side? I'm sure he'll get a run out in the last 9 games, mate. I've got no doubt about that. Chilwell was terrible, says Dave. If England, Gordon apart, were playing in my back garden, I would close the blinds, says Gary. Thanks for your membership as well, Gary. And thanks to everybody watching. 550 people watching live. We don't take it for granted. Thanks for your support on a Sunday night. Do want to just say as well, just out of interest, for those of you watching the show tonight, we did have a few others playing international football. Martin Dubravka conceded one of the quickest goals in international football, I think, last night. It was the quickest recorded international goal as his team lost 2-0. Bruno obviously played 79 minutes against England, left the pitch without injury, which is good news. Fabian Scher, he played a full game in Copenhagen as Switzerland drew 0-0. Garen Kowal played for Australia under-23s last night. They drew 1-1 and he scored the penalty. So he did get a goal, which is great. Other ones of interest, Lewis Hall and Lewis Miley were playing England under-20s. Miley completed 72 minutes and Hall departed after 78 minutes and they won 5-1. Alexander Isak, well, for him, for Sweden, they were playing Portugal. They lost 5-2 and Isak completed the full game. And Kraft came on as a 60th minute replacement in that game as well. Forthcoming internationals, Miggy Almirón's playing on Monday for Paraguay. Jamal Lewis is playing for Northern Ireland on Tuesday against Scotland. So that's your update on the internationals. Lads, do you think there are still employees in the club who run it and think for Ashley Way? Also, in the club programme, they advertise all the money supporters who are wealthy, etc. Phil, do we think there are people who worked in the Ashley Way? The answer is yes, from my point of view, Mitch.
I said that on Friday, and I stand by it. I think there are some people who were in place who can't think another way because that's the way they've always done it and are wary of letting things go another way because they've got a little system to protect, in my opinion. Simple as that. And but they couldn't just shoot everybody out because we had such a bloody ghost ship. Would have had nobody left anyway. And I think that's a problem. And it has been a problem and remains a problem, in my opinion. And until... but that needs the leadership and the ability to change to roll from downhill. And that takes time.
Your views on that, Stu?
I concur wholeheartedly with my learned friend on the other side of the screen. There you go.
What do we think about the rumours of Isak being targeted by Arsenal this summer? Get used to it, Chris, is what I think. We're going to get lots of this. Bruno and Isak are going to be targets number one and two, depending as well on where we end up in the league. If we don't qualify for any European football, pressure is going to be ramped up, Mitch, I think. Good evening to Jeff Carter, a familiar face once upon a time in the chat. I'm still alive, being held hostage in Sunderland. back home soon, he says. Jeff, good to see you back in the chat, mate. One of the old school from when the days of back in the days when me and Mitch started this blasted thing. But go on, Mitch.
Yeah, look, there's a narrative that we've allowed to put out to hide behind. And this is why I get a little bit annoyed that we've lost control of this narrative a little bit. We use FFP to hide behind to say that's why we can't do this and that's why we can't do that. And then journalists who want to stir the pot jump on it and they start putting suggestions, hints, rumours. And then fans of other clubs start to get excited because they're the fans of the other clubs who don't want to admit that we've got good players and don't want to admit that we're a danger to them, but they'll quite happily get excited if they'll take Bruno or Isaac off work. Because they start to get a superiority complex kick back in because we've not had such a good season this season. And so that then stokes rumour. And the way it works with social media now is some rumours can get a lot of traction very, very quickly without much actual solid information. And so, yeah, I think it's get used to it. We're going to suffer a lot of that. The only people who really know or the players themselves, the agents in the club.
And what's your thoughts on Bruno, Mitch? The lad's opinions, he says, but we'll ask you first before I go to Stu. Saying he didn't know what would happen in the future. It's the first time I've heard him say anything like that. Well, I mean, I guess it's what context that was in, really. You know, I saw the interview, but it's the context that it's in.
He's not Clinton Baptiste. He cannot see the future. And so he's probably being too honest with an answer, that's all. And I think the other problem is there's somebody like Bruno, because he's passionate and he cares, will on occasion let something come out like he did.
In translation.
On social media. Well, the translation thing's a different one.
That's how he's doing it. He's limited.
Yeah, that's right. Because English isn't his first language and he's not a natural English speaker, sometimes he will say things without subtle nuance that we would pick up a different way. And so there is an element of that, but generally he's passionate and he's honest. And I think that's the reality of this, is we just have to sit tight. I would be disappointed if we're put in a position where we've got to move on any of the players that we should be building the core of a top-class team around, and Bruno and Isaac are two of them.
He's also said he's happy at the club, says Daniel Igo, which is true, Stu. You know, we've heard him say that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think the only way Bruno's going to go is if Bruno asks for a move, or someone comes in and triggers this clause. Whether, again, we're still not fully aware of what it is. We know it's 100 million, but is it upfront as has been reported, or is it 50 upfront, 50 spread over? So that there's behind the scenes, but the issue that we've got, and I think it's great that some of our players are getting linked with Real Madrid and Barcelona and Bayern Munich, and because it shows how far we've come. A couple of years ago, we couldn't loan them out to Rochdale and Rotherham, could we? So this is where we are. But with Bruno and Isaac, they are our two probably most sellable assets, but we're not a selling club anymore. And this is what we have to get our heads around. But they are two out of four, possibly five, standout top quality players. If you add Botman, a fit Botman to it, Anthony Gordon and possibly Joe Linton, we don't know enough about Tonali yet. So two out of four or five, it looks like Gordon's going to go nowhere. Tonali's certainly not going to get sold in the summer. And Botman's going to be out till Christmas. So how do we unsettle the Newcastle machine a little bit further? We'll pick their two best players that they've got available that could be sold. But wait, hopefully we have the summer that I'm expecting us to have, and then the two out of eight top quality players, and it doesn't make as much impact as what it does at the moment. It's the fear of loss and hope to gain thing. As Mitch quite rightly said, you'll have Arsenal fans slagging you off, oh, you're a small club, you're no good, I thought you were going to do this, Bruno turned us down for you, he made a wrong mistake, oh, we'll have Isaac, bro. You know, so it's the hypocrisy of it all. When you see your players being linked with top clubs, unless the player's saying, I want to sign for that club, just put it down to rumours and agents trying to make money.
Yeah. You have to look in situations like this. Where's that coming from? Who's releasing it? Which news organisation's releasing it? And then you start to get to understand what spin's being put in it. So, classic example this weekend, through Reuters, I think it was, 777 partners have been told, have let it be known that they've received a letter from the Premier League saying that they're of a mind to approve the takeover of Everton. Then, when more of that comes out, who released that? Well, I think 777 partners to try and make themselves look good, because when you look at the conditions for them to take over, good luck at that, chaps.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't got the money to do that. You haven't got the ability to do that. And how you're going to do that, I do not know. But that's already started a narrative in the press from a certain angle, from a certain slant, that if it doesn't go through, 777 partners can wave this article around and go, oh, but they told us they were of a mind and what's changed. And so it always now, with any football story, be it a transfer, a takeover, or what have you, you've got to look at which news outlet is releasing it, what's the spin being put on it, who benefits from that spin being put on it, and what's behind it. And even down to transfers, and like I say, remember every now and again, somebody will pop up and say, oh, PIF are going to buy Club X. And it turns out the people that are mostly behind it are journalists associated with that club. And what it is it's a plea to PIF to say, please come and buy us. And but that then gets their own fans wound up and worked up, and they're getting excited on social media. And then Peter's out and dies again. And so this is how you have to handle it all. Treat a lot of it as white noise. And if something does happen, we've got to trust, again, we've said it all along, trust the process. And this is where we still have to try and trust the process, that there's something happening in mind that at the end of it, we are going to be better off. But in football terms, it makes no sense to be an open to sell a couple of your best players that you should be building the squad around.
Stephen Kennedy asked a question here. Good one, this. Do you think Wilson could be persuaded to stay as third-choice striker? If not, we need two strikers in the summer. Wilson would play the same amount of games next season as he's played so far as a third-choice. It's an interesting one, that's Stu, because he's, you know, again, he's another one of those who could have gone in the January transfer window, you know?
I don't think his own... I wouldn't say a belief in his own ability will allow him to become third-choice striker. And I think this season will be the last we see of Callum Wilson. He's scored some great goals. He's always been committed when he's played. He is one of those natural finishers. Just unfortunately, he's been hit with injuries at unfortunate times for him. And yes, we will. We do need two strikers. We need someone to challenge Isak and a young one to replace them. And I've got my own ideas, but we'll leave that for another time because I've still got my little rant to do. I think Wilson will be sold. It'll generate money. He's realised he's probably out of the England picture long term now. He's not going to be there in 2 years' time for the World Cup. And he likes the warm weather. I'll let you put the rest together yourself.
Yeah, I did say we'd leave the rant until the end because Harry said Friday's show was a rollback to lockdown with Mitch on one. I really enjoyed it. And the notes that you've put together, Stu, about FAB is where we're going to finish, because I didn't want to turn people off. In case people thought, well, I didn't want people thinking it was going to be an FAB rant again the night. But because obviously you don't do the Amigos, we haven't had a chance to discuss it with you. So final 6 minutes dedicated to you, mate. FAB, what did you make? I mean, you've had time, I guess, to listen to the Amigos and hear what we all thought about it. What were your views?
Well, it's not more of a rant, it's more of an observation. And what started with, as you know, I was in Newcastle last week and then flew back. Then I've had a cold, and then it's Ramadan over here, so it's quieter work-wise. So I've had a lot more time than I normally have. And I hate being, like, doing nothing. I need to be busy, active. So I thought, right, what I'll do is I'll start making notes of a week of Newcastle United without a game. And so I've actually got them written down. So I wrote at the top, there's a week in the world of NUFC without a game. First point was, there was the usual fallout because we had the temerity to lose to the club world champions. Imagine. So that was a big fallout there. So it wasn't all about the FAB. I just come onto it, and then when I started writing, I couldn't stop. Second one, the second thing that caught the attention of the fan base, and it, again, it's just to light a fire under them, isn't it? Because we will bite, we do bite. Steve Bruce once again pipes up with his own wonderfully deluded version of events. And then I wrote underneath it, he really is the turd that won't flush. then Anthony Gordon's pick for the England squad, only for this to be overshadowed in the media due to Nike making a controversial move to appease minorities by deciding national teams shouldn't have the national flags on their shirts. Simple response, don't buy it. See what Nike think about that. Because that's what they did it for sales. So don't give them the sales and then they'll have to change it. Then I wrote FAB. And then I wrote four pages. So what I wrote initially was, it's easy to criticise when people are making mistakes. It's harder but more rewarding to make suggestions on how to improve. And I say this because it's easier for me to say this than you or Mitch or Steve Hasty, because I'm not battle weary, or I haven't been scarred from 20 years or over 20 years of Newcastle United politics. I support the team, and I've lived abroad a long time, and I get back as often as I can to support the team. So I've never been fortunate, or as it may be in some cases, unfortunate enough to have had direct dialogue with the club. But for me, the clue is in the title, Fans Advisory Board. Fans should be advising the board. Herein lies the problem. So I started doing right what I believe was problems. But remember, I said, with problems, there have to be solutions, because we can all point out and say that's wrong. You've got to say something right. So point A, it appears, the whole Fans Advisory Board, it appears manufactured, it appears lip service, and for me, they were just palmed off. From the outside looking in, the clubs seem to be doing it because they have to rather than they want to. The next point is, do the Fans Advisory Board, this is a question, canvas suggestions from other fans to put to the board, specifically to Darren Neils and Peter Silverstone, or do they just give their own opinions? That's when they turn up. Or next one, shouldn't the club be seeking feedback on things they may want to implement? Isn't that the purpose of the Fans Advisory Board? We're thinking of doing this, this, and this. What do you as fans think? The next point was, it's evident that the Fans Advisory Board was handpicked. Can the next term go to public vote, or at least season ticket owners, holders, vote for who goes on the Fans Advisory Board? This would give the fans, in my opinion, the Fans Advisory Board more credibility, and other fans would feel better represented. So then that takes us on to the Amigos, when you had your questions about it. Mitch was asked a question thrown out in mid-rant, is what would he ask? And so I'm not speaking on behalf of Mitch, I'm speaking on behalf of myself. He's more than capable of speaking on behalf of himself. The questions I would ask, first question to Darren Eales, as CEO, are you empowered to make decisions put to you by the Fans Advisory Board without having to seek answers further up the food chain? Because this is what CEOs should be able to do. And what response I would expect from that, I'll get back to you on that. Because it's just the standard palm off. Next one, to Peter Silverstone, I'll ask him, can you allay fans' fears and confirm that by the start of next season, there will be significant new partnerships in place to offset PSR and financial fair play and allow the club to grow on the pitch, which top and bottom is what most of us care about. In fact, all of us who support Newcastle care about a successful first 11 for Newcastle United, which is what I alluded to earlier. The next question I would ask back to Darren Eales, who decides and how long would it take to scrap the potentially dangerous and draconian away tickets situation? Do we have to wait for a fan to be injured, trying to go walking through home fans to get to a box office before we say, oh, well, we won't look at that? Can't we be proactive instead of reactive and actually show trust instead of trying to control fans? This is the fans' way of getting out. Or is it just a way of hiding tickets and storing tickets and passing them on to corporate where you can get a higher value for them? So that was a question I asked Darren Eales. Next question is to Peter Silverstone. If we were to invite a stadium sponsor, training ground sponsor, training kit sponsor, stand sponsor, all of which would generate the biggest revenue short-term and long-term to enable us to grow commercially, what do you believe to be the parameters? What I'm saying by that is, if we're having a ground sponsor, we're not just going to take $3 million from Farm Foods. It has to be from a globally recognized company, minimum 25, 30 million a year. Get specific answers, whether he gives them or not. But these are the questions that I think the Fans Advisory Board should be asking those in power. The next question I'd ask Darren Eales is, why are supporter services a laughing stock with the majority of fans who have interacted with them? Either empower them to make decisions or just fire them, because it's serving no purpose at the moment. Then I'll go back to Peter Silverstone and I'll ask another question. Is the St. James's Park ticket fiasco, where thousands can't get tickets regardless of membership, yet see empty seats in St. James's Park or see websites selling at inflated prices, a conscious, commercially driven decision so that it becomes accepted by the masses that prices will increase sharply and in the short to midterm? Or is it to brainwash us into accepting a new stadium is the only logical answer? Just some clarification and some honesty. And the last question I'll ask is, what do PIF want regarding the stadium? Not, well, we're doing this study, we'll get back to you. We're doing this, we'll get back to you. Oh, that's a good question. Never answered a question. We're not politicians. We're not in the House of Commons. We're football fans. Invite us to ask questions. At least have the decency to answer them, or come out and have a proper sit down with proper fans. Get people from the Supporters Club NUSC on there. Get people like Mitch, Steve Acey, yourself. Get people who have got a better understanding of the club than what I have, and get these questions answered. That's what I would ask. So it's okay saying I think the Fans Advisory Board is just put together and handpicked, but there's my questions I would ask the board if I was sitting on it, which I don't want to, by the way. But that's the questions I would ask. And the none of them are yes or no. I want answers, not palmed off.
One thing's for sure. If Stu was on the FAB and asked those questions, he wouldn't be on it for long. Fact hurts, says Mark Byers. And when people say we want answers from the PIF, who do they mean? It's a pretty big thing. That's a good point, Ian. Maybe it's for another show. Thanks to all of you in the chat. Thanks to all the moderators, as always. Thanks to everybody who sent in questions. We did get to them maybe a week later than maybe imagined. But thanks to Stu and to Mitch as well. Great night. I'll be back tomorrow, 6 o'clock, with the Fans Forum. I look forward to seeing you all then. Have a good Sunday evening. Take care, lads.
Cheers, everyone.